Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host, and it's a what day of the week is it? Is it a
Wednesday?
Oh, it's a Wednesday, but we're doing it like it's a Thursday because it's 2 hours of open forum.
Hey, so, how about that?
It'll be interesting to see if we get any groovy music. Jimmy Akin, our guest both hours today, 888-318-7884. And you probably know what to do. You can call with any question that you've got. If you're new to the program, you don't have to be Catholic to call. You don't have to be Christian to call. You got a question about faith, about God, about the Bible, about Jesus, anything else, 888-318-7884. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of The Bible is a Catholic Book and The Words of Eternal Life and many other books, and the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that? Friday. What do we got Friday?
The Canals of Mars.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot. The Canals of Mars. In the
19th century, there were a group of astronomers, starting with an Italian one named Schiaparelli, and then the American astronomer Percival Lowell and many others who reported seeing canals on the surface of Mars, which then led to a discussion of Martian civilization and things like that. So this week we're looking at that story, and next week we're going to be looking at what the scientific evidence we today have says about the possibility of life on Mars, and the evidence is that there's a much bigger possibility than most people are aware of.
Yeah, I got to talk with you a little bit about it, and it's fascinating. I just remember years ago, must have been 20 years ago, some press conference about what looked like
1996.
Was it 96? Mm-hmm. Oh, so it was a long time ago, and then you never heard that much about it afterwards.
Yeah. That was one data point, which was actually a pretty good one. Yeah. And there have been multiple ones since then and before it as well.
All right.
The guy who designed the primary test on the Viking landers in the 1970s, mm-hmm. He only passed on a few months ago, but he became convinced that we actually detected life in the 1970s. And he continued to monitor the evidence as it came in. And if you go to his website, which is still up, he has a summary of the evidence that he wrote last year. And he's got like 26 different pieces of evidence.
Wow. Our number is 888-318-7884. That's Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. It drops Friday mornings. You can find it by just searching Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. I bet you could even just put in Mysterious World and you'd find it. But that's just a bet. I don't actually know that.
Hopefully.
I haven't tried it. Again, 888-318-7884 is the idea that, because I know that Mars lost most of its atmosphere.
Yeah.
Is the idea that life... that it was flourishing and then the atmosphere went away and there may be some remnants there? Or what's the theory on life on Mars?
Remnants of the atmosphere is certainly there.
Yeah, but I mean...
And certainly Mars was a much more congenial environment in the past. It had a much thicker atmosphere and it had lots of liquid water flowing on the surface. It had warmer temperatures.
Yeah.
And if life ever gets a foothold...
Yeah, it's pretty hard to get rid of it.
Yeah. Something, I mean, maybe big complex organisms might die, but bacteria breed really fast and they're really simple and thus they adapt
really well
to new circumstances really well. As Jeff Goldblum says in Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
In that inimitable Jeff Goldblum way.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I'm going to try to do it. All right, 888-318-7884, the number. Looking forward to that. I'm interested in the canals of Mars. Let's go to Mason. We'll start with Mason in Nashville. Mason called yesterday, and I called him Nathan. So I'm really glad Mason called back again. Mason, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So, Jimmy, full disclosure, I'm an Anglican, but the All Saints and All Souls Day has had me thinking a lot about purgatory, the afterlife, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my question, and really just trying to kind of understand where you guys are coming from on all of this, my question is essentially, like, from what I understand, the saints bypass purgatory and go directly to heaven. And so my question is, are they going directly to heaven because they've reached a state of perfect sanctification, like in the Wesleyan sense, or what exactly gets them to be able to bypass purgatory?
Well, so although the church holds that it's possible to bypass purgatory, and someone who does bypass it would go directly to heaven, it doesn't hold that all the saints who are in heaven bypass purgatory, because the whole point of purgatory is to get you ready for heaven. And so anyone who is in heaven is perfectly purified from not only the guilt of their sins, but also from disordered desires as well. That's the principal thing, according to John Paul II, that purgatory does, is it purifies you of disordered desires that you had in this life. But there is no guarantee that any given saint went directly there. That is not part of church teaching. I've sometimes heard Catholics speculate things like that, but that's sort of a folk Catholic idea that doesn't correspond to church teaching and frankly doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Because if most people go to purgatory and all people who go to purgatory end up in heaven, then over time, most people in heaven would have gone through purgatory first, because only a comparative few would not have a need for purgatory. And so most of the people in heaven would have gone through purgatory first. In terms of what's required in order to go to directly to heaven without purgatory, one needs to be have no need of the consequences of of the consequences of personal sin. And so consequently, the way John Paul II understood this, it would seem to imply that you need to be free of all disordered desires. And that would seem to be a very small number of people, if any. The church holds out this as a possibility, but it doesn't have a teaching about how many people actually fall into that category. And so that would be a matter of theological speculation. But given the realities of human nature, certainly most people die with some disordered attachments. And that would mean that the number of people who don't need to go through purgatory would be comparatively few.
What do you think, Mason?
I mean, that definitely helps me kind of wrap my head around things. Maybe I don't know if I had heard someone say that or if it was just an assumption of mine. I thought I heard someone say that in regards to, like, invocation of the saints, the assumption was that they were all in heaven, not in purgatory, and so that's why it made sense to invoke them. Maybe I misunderstood what I heard.
Well, someone could have said something like that too, but that also doesn't fully correspond to the Catholic understanding of things. I wouldn't be at all surprised if someone said that, even a Catholic saying that. But the Church acknowledges that the holy souls in purgatory can also pray for us. So if you're praying to someone and they died in God's friendship, they can be aware of your prayer and pray for you whether they're in purgatory or in heaven.
Mason, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm going to keep going because every line's full already. Let's go to William in Saskatchewan, listening. That's up in Canada, listening on the Catholic Answers app. William, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Okay, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. Is it cold up there yet?
That's good. It's actually been a very nice fall. Sometimes we have a few feet of snow by this time.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear it.
My question for Jimmy is if he's a fan of the Ozark Mountain Daredevils.
So for people who may not be aware, the Ozark Mountain Daredevils are a country rock band from the Ozark Mountains, and that's where I grew up. I grew up in the Boston Mountains, which are the highest part of the Ozark Mountains in northwest Arkansas. The Ozarks also extend into southern Missouri and eastern Oklahoma and so forth. And the Ozark Mountain Daredevils are from right in the area where I grew up. In fact, I know they played in my hometown of Fayetteville at various points. So I'm definitely aware of them. In terms of am I a fan of them? Well, I'm actually not that familiar with their music. They belonged to a generation of musicians that was sort of right before I became musically aware, at least of pop music. And so I didn't really grow up listening to them. They weren't on the radio a lot when I was growing up. And I have heard some of their music and some of their songs I like. Like a lot of, musicians these days, though, and in the 20th century, they have some elements in their music that aren't as wholesome as they could be. And so I'm not a fan of all of their songs. But the bottom line is, well, I'm open to whatever's good. I'm not open to whatever I find problematic, and ultimately I'm not hugely familiar with their work, although I have listened to some of their songs.
Okay, William?
So, I was just going to ask, what's your thoughts on listening to an artist like Jimi Hendrix, who has songs titled Voodoo Child and stuff like that? Like, could you listen to other stuff that doesn't have to do with evil?
Yeah, well, it's the same thing. I mean, you cannot avoid problematic people in this world, because everybody in the world today is problematic. And St. Paul acknowledges this. In talking to the Corinthians, he says, look, I'm not asking you to not associate with pagans, because then you'd have to leave the world, and you can't do that. So the correct approach to such things, whether it's pagan or modern American or anything else, is applying a principle that he articulates in 1 Thessalonians 5, which is test everything and hold fast to what is good. And we see Paul himself doing this with Greek literature, even Greek literature talking about pagan gods. If you look, for example, in Acts chapter 17, he's addressing the men of the Areopagus in Athens, and he quotes from some pagan writers talking about pagan understanding of the gods, and he sorts it and says, okay, here are some elements that you guys are right about. And so if Paul, using critical thinking and using his Christian faith, was able to engage with imperfect cultural works and sort the bad from the good, then we can do the same thing, whether those works are literary or movies or TV shows or books or games or music or whatever it may be. Test everything and hold fast to what is good.
William, thanks. Got to go to the break. Appreciate the call from Saskatchewan, and I'm glad you're having a mild fall up there. Right now, we've got the store-wide sale going. I don't think they're shipped to Canada for the $5 flat rate program, but anywhere in the continental United States, any order, $5 flat rate right now, and everything's on sale for our big store-wide sale. Shop.catholic.com.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
A brand new item at EWTNRC.com this month is the Our Lady of Kibeho statue. Created by EWTN in consultation with Rwandan genocide survivor and popular host and author Immaculée Ilibagiza, this new statue is based on the church-approved apparitions of the Blessed Mother to three young girls in Africa. To order, go to EWTNRC.com and search for item number 747.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live, 2 hours of bonus open forum today on this Wednesday. Jimmy Akin here with us both hours. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Going down to going from Saskatchewan, Canada, down to Pensacola, Florida. Listening on Catholic.com, Donald in Pensacola. You are up next, Donald. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. My question is it sinful to watch a TV series such as a Ghost Hunter show where they say, constantly, it's almost like slapstick, however. Is that simple, and or might it even be just offensive to God?
So,
or should I not watch that stuff?
Okay, so this question relates directly to what we said before, and the same principles are going to apply, but let me approach it from, at least initially, from a slightly different angle. So saying things like, oh my God, or Jesus Christ, or stuff like that as an expression of, as interjections, I guess is the way to say it using the grammatical category. What those are is interjections. Using divine references as interjections has commonly been understood as taking the Lord's name in vain. It is not 100% clear that that is the case. I can imagine an argument against that, in particular because in some circumstances you can mean them reverently. I mean, something astonishing could happen, and you could legitimately be invoking God when you say, "Oh my God," meaning like, "Oh my God, help us."
Yeah,
or
right.
something like that. So it's not the words themselves that are intrinsically evil. There's nothing wrong with "oh" or the word "my" or the word "God." It's what you're intending to do with them. Now, if you're intending to desacralize them, to treat them as non-sacred things, if that's your conscious intent, well, then that's bad because God is sacred. And so you should honor God as sacred and treat his name as sacred. On the other hand, if people aren't intending any offense to God and they're just doing this because it's something they grew up hearing and it's never really occurred to them to think about it in this way, then they could be innocently ignorant of any deliberate offense of God, in which case they would not be offending God because they're not trying to treat his name with disrespect. They're doing this unthinkingly. So I wouldn't be too quick to judge the hearts of people who do this. In terms of can you witness other people do this in some situation? Well, Cy Kellett, if someone says, "Oh my God," in a thoughtless way in your presence, do you have to run out of the room?
I have not thus far done that.
How about close your eyes and stop up your ears?
No, I don't think you have to do that.
Do you have to avoid that person forevermore?
No.
Okay.
If any of the answers are yes, I'm blowing it right now.
No, you're getting them right.
Okay, good.
In fact, if someone's doing that, you know, you could do a service to them by evangelizing them.
Mm-hmm.
And that means being around a person, even if they're not perfect. So that shows us we don't have to run away from these situations. And consequently, it is not intrinsically wrong to either be around people or to watch shows or listen to radio shows or whatever just because someone is doing something with language that they shouldn't. It doesn't mean I'm endorsing what they're doing. And as long as I'm not corrupting my own morals by doing it, as long as I'm not setting a sinful example to someone else, then it does not rise to the level of a personal fault. And if there are other adequate reasons to watch or listen to something, well, then you can kind of hold your nose and ignore the bad stuff for the sake of the good stuff, just like St. Paul did when he read Greek literature about pagan gods. And you better believe that literature about pagan gods said all kinds of things that would be untrue and be regarded as blasphemous from a Christian context. But that didn't stop St. Paul from applying the principle he articulates in 1 Thessalonians 5, which is test everything and hold fast to what's good. He didn't say run away from everything if it has a tiny bit of stuff in it shouldn't.
Right. Okay. Donald, thanks very, very much. I appreciate the call. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. We head now to Phoenix, Arizona. Sebastian, watching on YouTube. You are up next. Sebastian, go ahead with your question.
Hey, guys. Hope you guys are doing well today.
We are. Thank you.
My question is something that I actually had my little brother tell me when I was having a conversation with him. And one thing that kind of is, like, difficult for him to understand is, that, like, a concept of, like, if one of us were to make it to heaven once it's our time and we were to make it, but then, like, a friend or a family member, if they weren't to make it, is there, like, a sadness about that in heaven? Or, like, what's the feeling of that? And
okay,
I just didn't know how to respond to that.
We don't know a huge amount about what heaven's going to be like because we haven't directly experienced it. And based on what we're given to understand in the New Testament, it exceeds our expectations. And so our minds in this life are not configured to be able to process the full reality of heaven. And so as a result, the New Testament gives us images of what heaven will be like that hint at what it's like and reveal something of what it's like, but don't disclose everything about what it's like because our brains are too puny for that right now. Well, one of the things that Scripture does reveal about heaven, this is at the end of the book of Revelation. If you want to look it up, it's in Revelation chapter 22. And it says that in the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem, in mankind's final state, God will wipe away every tear from the eyes of the people who live in his heavenly city, that there will be no more crying or sadness or pain anymore, for the old order of things has passed away. And if you take that literally and as an absolute, well, that would mean that we won't be sad in heaven, even if some people we love in this life have not made it to heaven. Now, that raises a question of, well, so that's been the classic understanding. The classic understanding of all Christians has been that we won't be sad in heaven, even if some of our earthly loved ones are not there. Well, how can we make sense of that? There are a number of possibilities, and I can't tell you for sure which one is true because it's a matter of speculation. But we can be comforted by the fact that even though they're not in heaven, they still are in the hands of a merciful God, and he's not going to do anything to them that's unjust or that they haven't chosen. And so he's both just and merciful even with the lost. And even if they've brought on frustration by cutting themselves off from God, the source of all goodness, well, okay, that's bad, but it's also something where God is respecting them. He's respecting their choice. And that provides some consolation that, you know, that God's letting them have what they chose, what they want. And if they're frustrating themselves because they choose not to be with God, well, that's their choice, and we'll respect that just the way God does, and so it won't be a source of pain for us. That's one possible way of understanding how this could work. I would say, you know, there are other possible ways of understanding how it can work that have been talked about down through history. But one way or another, it seems that our minds will be configured in such a way and will have such an accurate and deep perspective on the way things are, including the way God's justice and mercy work, that we won't feel pain if not everybody we care about is in heaven.
Sebastian, I hope that that helps with your little brother. And we'll leave it there because there's lots of folks on the line. I'm going to go to Omaha, Nebraska now. Samuel in Omaha, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. You're up, Samuel. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hello, Jimmy. My question is that, so I'm in a relationship with this girl. She's Christian and she's a strong, firm believer. However, she said that she is non-denominational. And for me as a Catholic, I would love to introduce her to my faith. Mm-hmm. So what would be the best way for me to introduce somebody that is not Catholic into Catholicism?
Well, there's not a single way of doing it. And so in terms of what's the best way to do it, that really depends on who you're dealing with and what their background is and what their preferences are. And you know her better than I do, so I'll have to leave the specifics of how to do it to you, but I can give you some suggestions. One possibility is whenever you're talking about your faith, then in your mutual Christian faith, then in a winning and positive way, you can say, oh, you know, when she describes something she believes, you can say, that's very interesting. And if Catholics agree with it, you could say, and as a Catholic, I agree with that. Or if it's something that is different than the Catholic faith, you can say, well, that's very interesting. Coming from a Catholic perspective, here's what I would say about that. And you don't have to say you're wrong. You know, that could put her off. You could just say, well, here's what I would say from my perspective. And that might lead to a dialogue between the two of you where you could maybe look up, discussions of the topics that come up between you. There's a lot of resources at Catholic.com. You could also say, hey, there's this program I sometimes listen to called Catholic Answers Live. And even though it's a Catholic show, it's got a lot of stuff that I think you might be interested in. Maybe you'd like to listen to that, or maybe we'd listen to it together.
Or if Catholic Answers Live is a little too Catholic for her at the moment, you could say, hey, there's this program I like called Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World that's about all these mysteries. And it does have a Catholic element in it, but it's about these mysteries. Maybe you'd want to check that out. You also could do things like invite her to go to Mass with you just so she can learn about what Catholic worship is like and see how Catholics live out their Christian faith in church. We have a little booklet that I wrote called The Words of Eternal Life that's designed to be read by anybody, no matter where they are on the faith spectrum. And I'd like to, if possible, Samuel, send you a copy of that, and you could read it and pass it on to her.
Samuel, if you hang on, we'll get your address and we'll send you a copy of Jimmy's book, Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness and Where to Find It. But we got to take a break right now. So we'll leave that in your hands. If you hang on the line, Thomas will get your information and we'll send it to you. We're going to continue with Open Forum. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Lots of folks on the line. So lots more questions coming up right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. It's free, and you'll have instant access to our daily broadcast, the schedule of upcoming shows, and you'll even be able to search the archive and listen to thousands of past shows. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll celebrate the feast of St. Charles Borromeo, the great Italian saint of the Counter-Reformation, and talk Bible foods with Rita Heikenfeld. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Did you just improvise that? Did you just find that in a file and decided I'll play that for him?
Nice.
Thanks, Darren. A little bit of groovy music for you on a Wednesday. Because Jimmy Akin's here and it's 2 hours of Open Forum, and why not? You're welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. I will let you know, though, there's a lot of folks on the line right now, and we're going to work our way through those questions. Let's go up to North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Josh in North Dakota, you are up. Josh, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Jimmy and Cy.
Hi, Josh.
I just want to open. It's an honor to talk to you both. I've listened to Catholic radio for years. This is my first time ever calling in.
Oh, this better be a good one then, Josh. I hope you've got a good one.
I hope it is.
Okay.
If it's a bad one, I might never call in again.
There are no bad questions, only bad answers.
So I was listening to your opening monologue about Mars and with the deteriorating atmosphere and everything, and it sounded a lot like C.S. Lewis is Out of the Silent Planets and kind of some of the basic premises he uses there. And I'm just curious, was he drawing on any scientific data he had at the time in writing that story or anything like that?
Well, let's see. So Lewis died in 1963, actually on the same day that President Kennedy did. in so November 22nd. And that means that he could have been drawing on scientific information or the scientific understanding of Mars as it was up to that point. And so I'm pretty sure he did at least some research in terms of what are conditions likely to be on Mars. I mean, he probably had absorbed some idea just of, you know, prior speculation just from growing up in the first part of the 20th century, because there was a lot of speculation. You know, you had Percival Lowell writing his books about Mars and the canals. You had H.G. Wells's War of the Worlds novel, which Lewis would have, I'm sure, been familiar with, since H.G. Wells was a fellow British author and very, very influential. So I would think that that he would have been drawing on the understanding of it at the time. That doesn't mean he was adhering to it fully, because he's writing works of science fiction and, you know, really sort of science fantasy literature here. And if he was trying to be strictly accurate to the scientific understanding of his day, he didn't do a perfect job. Because I know from reading Out of the Silent Planet that, so when the main character, Ransom, is transported from Earth to Mars, he feels gravity becoming gradually weaker as he leaves Earth. And then as he starts approaching Mars, it starts gradually growing stronger again, as if there is this slow diminution of gravity followed by a turnaround and an increase in gravity. And that's not actually how gravity works. Once you get out of Earth's gravity well, you're going to be in microgravity and basically zero gravity, but it's really microgravity. And you're going to stay in microgravity until you enter Mars orbit or Mars's gravity well. So you won't see this slow diminution and slow increase. I would say that there was, up to the 1960s, a lot of speculation about life, even advanced life on Mars. There was an article that I mentioned in the upcoming Mysterious Worlds episodes that was published like around 1960 that was saying, hey, we've got these images from the Martian surface and they're best explained by suggesting there's plants down there. And so so the idea of Mars having a more robust biosphere than we today would suppose is something that would have been consistent with the science of C.S. Lewis's time.
Does that make sense, Josh?
Yes, it does. I'm looking forward to the episode on Friday to hear more.
Well, I got to say, that long time listening to Catholic radio, first call, I think that was a very fine question. And so I would like to send you Jimmy Akin's book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. So if you hold on, and I definitely want you to feel like you should call again. So hang on.
Well, thank you. I definitely will.
All right. We'll get your information and we'll send you The Bible is a Catholic Book from Jimmy Akin. The number is 888-318-7884. We're going to the Bay Area in California. Gabriel in the Bay Area watching on YouTube, which I believe was invented in the Bay Area. Gabriel, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
All right, I just had a little question about free will. So from what I understand, I think everything must have a cause or it's uncaused, including our own actions, which if something's uncaused, I think it'd probably be random. And if it's caused, then eventually it would have like a chain of causality that goes outside of ourselves. So from that perspective, it kind of seems like none of our actions we can have control over. I'm wondering if maybe my reasoning is wrong, or maybe there's a way of reconciling that with the idea of free will, because I know that I think Catholics generally believe in free will, or maybe compatibilism or something like that.
Yeah, so the Catholic Church, Catholics not only generally believe in free will, the Catholic Church teaches that we have free will. And in terms of explaining how that works philosophically, there are different possibilities. Ever since the last few centuries, there was this desire to try to, on the part of certain people as a result of the scientific revolution, to try to envision the world as sort of a clockwork universe, where it was basically a cosmic machine where every event was determined by a prior set of conditions that were sufficient to dictate each outcome. So the idea was, at least as it's sometimes articulated, if you could know the precise positions of all of the particles of matter energy at the beginning of the universe, and you knew the laws pertaining to these particles, then you could predict every event in the entire history of the universe, because it would just unfold the way a clock grinds through its range of possibilities in an orderly, predictable manner. Well, then quantum mechanics happened in the beginning of the 20th century, and quantum mechanics indicated that if the world works that way, we don't have evidence for it, because there are phenomena, especially very small ones, but it can apply to larger ones too. But there are phenomena in the world that do not seem to proceed in that kind of mechanistic, fully predictable way. And so as a result, we need to describe various phenomena in terms of what's called the wave function. And the wave function, one way of understanding it, is it's basically a set of probabilities of where you would find a particle, like let's say an electron or, you know, an atom, where you would find it if you measured it. But you can't predict exactly where you will find it the way you could if the universe operated in a clockwork fashion. Instead, you can only describe the possibilities of where it's most likely to be found and where it's less likely to be found. And so that suggested, okay, well, this clockwork view is wrong. There's more to it, at least to a lot of scientists and philosophers. That's what it suggested. And so even in quantum mechanics, we don't see pure randomness. I mean, suppose, for example, Cy Kellett, I said, pick a number randomly between 1 and 100.
Okay.
Okay. So if I said that, notice I haven't. I just said, if I did.
But I did pick one just in case you do.
Okay, well, we'll get to that. But if you truly picked one randomly, there would be a 1% chance that you would pick every number between 1 and 100. There wouldn't be like a bell curve around 50. If it was truly random with nothing else affecting it, then it would just be a flat 1% across that entire range of numbers.
Yeah.
What's called the sample space. And so just so we don't leave people hanging, what number did you pick?
47.
47, not bad.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, I appreciate that.
Mentalism would suggest you might pick a number like 37.
Oh, really?
So that, yeah, because there are some quirks in human cognition that mentalists, which is kind of magician, are able to exploit. But having said that, even in quantum mechanics, we're not seeing pure randomness. If we did, the wave function for where we'll find a particle would be flat. It could be anywhere in the universe with equal probability. And that's not what we see. So what we see is something that looks like, okay, it's partially predictable. And so it looks like there's something influencing the result without fully determining the result. And that seems to be a reasonable analogy to human free will, because there are things that pertain to the choices we make that affect them. You know, like I like pepperoni more than sardines, so I'm probably more likely to order a pepperoni pizza than a sardine pizza, but I'm not guaranteed.
Right.
I'm not forced to pick pepperoni. I could order a different kind of pizza. I could order a mushroom pizza, or I could order Chinese instead of a pizza. So our experience of free will is that there are factors that influence it, but without fully determining the choice. Because if you say to someone, well, okay, you just made a choice, you just ordered dinner, were you forced to make the choice you were? And most of the time people are going to say, no, I wasn't forced.
Right.
I chose this because I like it. There was an influence by my desires, but I wasn't forced. You know, I could have chose something else. And on other occasions, I have chosen other things.
Right.
And so the simple dichotomy or the simple split between it must be fully determined or it must be completely random doesn't seem to describe either our free will or other phenomena we see in the universe. Does that help you out, Gabriel?
It does a little. I definitely get this idea of how science shows that the world isn't completely deterministic. That being said, I mean, the wave function itself, which controls the probabilities mm-hmm. of where you might find a particle, is deterministic. We can map that out completely.
No. It's describable statistically, but that doesn't mean it determines the outcome. Something has to collapse the wave function.
Yeah, and that's where the randomness is. And I don't see how we have control over the randomness. And even if we had control over, like, the general probability of the wave function, I guess how would we have control over that? Would our control over that also have some wave function behind it? And then would we have to have control over that and that and that? Mm-hmm.
So we're getting into some very interesting territory that I'm afraid would take longer to deal with than the time we have available. What I would leave you with to think about is the idea that there's more than one kind of causality. At one end, we have full determinism. At another end, we have complete randomness. And in the middle, we have something where there are influences without being fully random. And that seems to describe our exercise of free will. Now, what ultimately determines in quantum mechanics, what ultimately determines where the particle is us taking a measurement of it. At least that's how it seems, although there's all kinds of debates even in quantum mechanics. What ultimately determines the choice we make as humans is our will. That's the sufficient thing. And if it helps you to think of it this way, our will is a faculty that God built into us. It is a created thing. So it does have a cause. Its cause is God. He gave us this will, but he also built into the will the ability to make choices for itself without being fully determined by other things and also without being simply purely random. So that's probably about as much as I'm able to do with it in a short space, but I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Gabriel. Thanks very, very much. We're going to take a break, though. Peter in Colorado, hang on. We're going to go to you first when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Jennifer says, behavior in the parking lot after Mass made me think twice about becoming a Catholic.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. No doubt. Yeah, sure. I've often said I think the number one impediment to making an act of faith in the Catholic religion is Catholics.
Yeah.
Yeah, hands down. Yeah. Yeah, we're a mess.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum. As a matter of fact, 2 hours of open forum with Jimmy Akin. And among the many things that Jimmy does is he takes heavy responsibility for the School of Apologetics. And among his responsibilities, teaching courses there. He's got a course called Bible Difficulties. And I don't think you know about this. I got this note from Carrie who said, read this on the air to Jimmy. Thanks, Jimmy. This has to do with your Bible Difficulties course. Uh-huh. For the great course, for a lover of the faith, you made the apologetics of this important topic simple and easy to remember. The course online likewise helps. The course outline likewise helps with memorization. The greatest thing is listening to Catholic Answers Live and hearing you apply these apologetics instructions just as you have presented them. I highly recommend this course.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Carrie.
Well, Carrie sent it to me.
Oh, but wasn't Carrie writing it?
No, no, James wrote it.
But thank you so much, James.
Yeah. Carrie sent me the note. Right now, you can get 50% off courses at this Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. You can get them at shop.catholic.com. Pick up the course that's right for you. The Catholic Answers School of Apologetics at shop.catholic.com. Peter in Colorado, I told you I was coming back to you when we came back. Are you there with us, Peter? Hello, Peter?
Hi.
Oh, hi, Peter. How old are you?
8.
All right. You got a question for Mr. Aiken?
Where is hell?
Well, the important thing about hell is that it is not so much a place as a relationship where you've cut yourself off from God, who's the source of all good things. And so as a result, you're not receiving those good things because you don't want them. You said, God, I don't want these. I don't want to be connected with you. I don't want to be in your presence. And so please keep all of your blessings for yourself. And God says, okay. And it doesn't matter so much where that person is when they do that. If they have fully cut themselves off from God, they could be anywhere and not be receiving the kind of spiritual blessings that God would want them to have. And so, in a sense, hell could be anywhere. Sometimes, Psych Hell, and I've talked about Laurie Anderson's description of heaven. It's exactly like where you are right now, only much, much better.
Yes.
Well, hell would be exactly like where you are right now, only much, much worse. And so, in a sense, hell could be anywhere. Now, there's a question about where the souls that are in hell are now. And souls don't have bodies like we do. They're not physical. And so they may not be occupying a place because they're not physical. They don't have bodies. And so how would they be in a particular place? They may not be in a place. They still exist. They're still real. But that doesn't mean they have a specific place that they're at. What about after they're resurrected, though?
Yeah.
Well, then they'll have their bodies back, and their bodies will need to be in a place because bodies need places to be in. And at that point, we don't really know where their bodies will be. Their bodies could be in a place in the new universe because God's going to renovate our universe and make it much better. The bodies of the people in hell could be in that new universe, or they could be in a different universe, but they will be somewhere. We just can't be real sure of where they are.
Okay, Peter?
Okay.
All right. You did a really good job. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Let's go to Michael in Columbus, Ohio, watching on YouTube. Michael, glad to have you. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy Aiken.
Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
Just fine.
I just had a quick question. Moved into a new area, and it's a little unfamiliar with me, and I just had the question, should I be doing a litmus test before I join a particular church? And what I mean by that is that there's some churches I've noticed that in this particular area that I moved into that are a little bit more looser with certain teachings that are in the catechism. Mm-hmm. Versus, what I've been born and raised in. And I'm just like, hey, wow, that's pretty radical. I don't know if this should be something that I should involve my family with. And then how do I go about teaching my kids, like, hey, look, there's a reason we go to this one and not that one.
Okay. Are you a member of the Latin Rite of the Church?
No, Roman Catholic.
Well, I know. Okay, so you're Roman Catholic. You're not a Chaldean Catholic or a Byzantine Catholic or a Maronite Catholic or anything like that?
No.
Okay, so if you're a Roman Catholic, then you're a member of the Latin or Roman Rite of the Church. And in the Latin Rite, people are more or less automatically, legally members of whatever parish they geographically reside within. So every parish has a geographical territory that's assigned by the bishop. And if you happen to live within that territory, you're automatically a member of a particular parish. That doesn't mean you have to go to that parish. You can go satisfy your Sunday obligation at any parish you want. Even if it's not a Roman Catholic parish, you could go to a Chaldean or Byzantine or Maronite Catholic or any other kind of Catholic parish. You can even join them. But really what that amounts to is you're getting on their mailing list. There aren't specific legal consequences typically for quote unquote joining a parish. In terms of finding a parish for your family, because you have the liberty of going to different parishes, I would say pick the one, you know, do some research and try out more than one and go to the one that you think will best foster the faith and devotion of your family. That would be my primary consideration.
Michael, I'm going to try to get as many on as I can before the top of the hour, so I hope that that was helpful for you. Thank you very much for the call. It's open forum. And up next, Frank in Louisiana, listening to EWTN Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Frank, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually in L.A.
I read it as Louisiana, but it's L.A. here in California. I gotcha.
No worries. I was asking about Catholic teaching on the apostolic prayer given by the priest to somebody on their deathbed. How does that relate to going straight to heaven or purgatory or whatnot? Please and thank you.
So this is known as the apostolic pardon, and basically it's the grant of a plenary indulgence. A plenary indulgence is one that in principle can deal with all of the remaining consequences of sins, even after they've been forgiven. And in principle, it would be possible to receive a plenary indulgence like the apostolic pardon and go directly to heaven. However, even if a priest gives you the apostolic pardon, just like any other time you attempt to receive a plenary indulgence, it's not guaranteed that it's going to remove absolutely all of the consequences of sin. That's really up to God to determine. And so there are some conditions that one needs to meet in order to fruitfully receive a plenary indulgence or fully receive it. And those conditions are a little bit easier to meet in the case of when you're dying and you receive the apostolic pardon. But still, if you have these disordered desires that you're hanging on to, then those still need to be dealt with. And the apostolic pardon itself doesn't fix your disordered desires. So they need to be fixed anyway. And thus, even though the church is trying to do its best to get you into heaven as fast as possible, by offering the apostolic pardon, that doesn't mean you're automatically going to go to heaven without having to be cleaned up first.
Okay, Frank?
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to try to get one more question on here before we go. We'll go to Michael in Bismarck, North Dakota. Michael, you got to be real quick with your question so we can get an answer from Jimmy for you.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. It's about baptism. We have a friend who was baptized as a Catholic. They're moving into the denominational church, and they're getting rebaptized. They're asking us to participate and celebrate with them. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we should do?
Okay. So the way I look at attending non-Catholic sacraments is if the sacrament will be valid, then in a sense, God is showing up for that sacrament.
Right.
And if God can show up for that sacrament, then in principle, I can too. So if you had, let's say, a Lutheran family, they've got a new baby, they're going to baptize their baby, it'll be valid, I can show up. The problem in this case, the person's already been baptized as a Catholic, the new baptism will not be valid, God will not be showing up in that sense, and neither would I.
Michael, thank you. You were very quick with your question, and I cut it tighter than I thought I had, so I appreciate that. Hey, if you're on the line, stay on the line. We're going to come back with Jimmy Akin, and we'll continue with Open Forum. If you haven't dialed yet, you're welcome to call. Two lines open, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Catholic Answers Live is for anybody. If you're a Christian, you can call. If you're not a Christian, you can call. If you're Catholic, you can call. If you're not a Catholic, you can call. If you got a question, we'd like to take it. 888-318-7884.